recording now. Tape's running.
Okay. Well, it's 6:08 here on Thursday evening, October 22nd, 2020. I'm going to call the Administrative Control Board for the Mount Regional Water Special Service District to order at this time. First on the agenda, do we have any public input tonight?
It does not appear as though we do, looking at the attendee list.
Okay, thank you. So item two is the executive session. I think we need to go into that and use this number that Scott has provided to call into.
Yep, so the way we're going to do this is Chris is going to excuse all of the board and myself from the meeting. You will not have to log back in. Your screen will just go white. Mountain Regional's conference bridge, that phone number has been provided to you via email. If you do not have that handy, please shoot me a text.
Okay. So does everybody have that number?
Yep. I'm good.
Okay. Well, then we're looking for a motion and a second to enter executive session.
So move.
Second.
That's Bob. Ian, all in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Okay, that was a unanimous. Okay, so Chris, I guess why don't you proceed with excusing us, and then the board will dial into this conference bridge number. Consent agenda. Were there any comments on the minutes?
So, Mike, I just got the tape rolling again. Just to reiterate what you just said, we're moving in. We, you know, came out of executive. We're moving into item three on the agenda, the consent agenda.
Okay, thank you. Were there any comments on the minutes from the September 10th board meeting?
Nope.
I liked how stuff was done in red. Kind of made it easier.
Yeah, that was nice.
Track that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that was a change Anna made.
How about the any comments to the minutes from the rate hearing? I have just one comment that it felt like it could use a title to it on the very first page.
On the minutes, Mike?
Yeah, it just says unapproved minutes, Administrative Control Board agenda, September 10th, but it doesn't.
Yeah, that's a good comment. We can get that addressed.
No, I'm sorry. It's October 8th. Where is the rate hearing? That is on the rate hearing. Yes. I think that with the October 8th minute should reflect that it was the rate hearing. The public hearing. Okay. So the next item on the consent agenda is the check register. Were there any questions there?
I have just one general question. We seem to write a lot of checks every month for refunds and this kind of stuff. What gives rise to that?
There's really two things, Bob, that cause that. The first is the water security deposit refunds that are all usually $1,500. When somebody's paid a deposit, when they paid their impact fee, when they connect to water, we refund that $1,500 deposit to them. The other time we're refunding money is when there's a closing and we've had to estimate the bill, but it's been off a little bit. And with so many titles running through the office right now, and title companies aren't coming back to get an updated estimate before they close. So,
okay, got it. Thanks.
Any other questions on the check register? Okay.
I had a couple. This one's probably for Scott or Sam. What's a Spine LL2 analyzer? It was $6,000, 300 something.
Yeah, I can take that one. We are upgrading the chlorine analyzer in our Spine Road booster station. And we're going to start using that location as part of our monitoring efforts as it relates to compliance. So it's going to be a critical analyzer for our monthly treatment plant reports that go to the state.
And you said it's a chlorine analyzer?
It's a chlorine pH and temperature analyzer, which helps put together the picture for how well we're disinfecting the water for virus removal.
Right on. Thank you. That's very thorough. And then the master agreement, Quinn's interconnect pipeline, that $175,000 charge, is that every year we pay that?
No, Ian. What that is it's one of the interconnect facilities. It's over in Park City to be able to move water to and from Park City system from, you know, Summit Water. So to better explain this, the concept of the master agreement is for water to be able to move from any one party to any of the other parties. Up until this year, the only interconnect that was functioning was the one that allows Mountain Regional to provide water to Summit Water. The interconnect that check goes to is on Park City's property, and it allows water to move from Summit's system to Park City and from Park City's system to Summit system. So that would leave just one interconnect remaining that's under construction now to allow water to move from Summit system to Mountain Regional.
And did they share in the cost of that interconnect, or is that solely on us?
No, it's split three ways, so that reflects one third portion.
Of constructing an interconnect?
Correct.
Is that what it is? So one
that's
third
correct.
Cost?
So it's one, and okay. To be clear, it's one third of the, you know, the invoice, right? So it's a progress payment, and that, you know, that request for payment is then split into three pieces: Mountain Regional, Summit Water, and Park City.
Okay, Mountain Regional's third.
So there's one more interconnect needed, and that one's going to be like $500,000 as well.
No, that one is cheaper. You know, calling me out on the exact number that we owe. I think it's, I don't have the number on the tip of my tongue.
I don't need it. I was just wondering if it was comparable. If it's less, that's fine.
Yep.
I'm confused. You saying we get the total bill and pay it and then divvy it up?
No, Weber Basin gets the total bill and pays it.
Okay.
And then invoices each party.
They add something to it?
Oh, good question. I don't believe so in this case, but Lisa or Steve may be able to answer that.
Hard to tell.
Yeah.
Not sure.
Okay, any other questions on the check register?
One more. There was a drug testing performed. Did we have an accident? Or was that a routine?
That was... I may need somebody else to answer it. That may have been a routine. We have had a recent accident that we can touch on, but I think that one is for a separate issue.
This one was dated the 24th of September.
Of September? That was a new hire.
Got it. Okay, thank you. That's it for me.
Okay.
Goodness. Okay, the next item is the consideration.
Excuse me, my audio kind of clicked out there. I have a question on one of the checks, and I think it goes to Sam, and it's just It's just related to the payment to J-Rock. We paid J-Rock $158,000. I'm guessing that that's a progress payment of some sort. And what I'd like to know is that how would you grade J-Rock's performance to get that $158,000? And if they did everything that you told them to do, what grade would they get?
Well, the Hidden Creek project has been a challenging project. And, you know, Scott's brought up a couple times, which I think is good perspective, annexing struggling or failing water systems and the projects that go along with those to bring them up to speed is hard, scrappy work, and the Hidden Creek kind of reflects that. J-Rock has never worked with the district before. And honestly, their crews have not had a ton of underground construction experience, as far as I can tell. So meeting schedule and work quality has been a challenge, but I think we're working through it. If I had to give them a grade, I don't know, can I give you a grade in a month when we're at substantial completion?
Sure.
Okay.
I was just wondering if they're working on any kind of corrective action plans based on what you think their performance is, and if they do that, would they be getting an A?
Things have improved the last week quite a bit with a change in the site superintendent, and I think they're trending in the right direction. I'll say that.
Why don't you address that in next month's engineering report? Okay?
Sure.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, interesting question. Anything else on the check register? Okay, how about item D, the consideration to auction the 2011 Ford Escape? You want to take us through that? What, Steve? Scott?
Yeah.
Who's running that?
We're auctioning off Doug's old vehicle that he used to use when he was with the district. With the purchase of the Highlander, we no longer need that as an office vehicle as well. So it's pretty beat up and things like that, but I think you'll still find value for somebody.
It's almost 10 years old.
Did I read the memo correctly that the minimum bid has to be above $3,550?
That is correct.
Minus the 12% auction, so is it less than $3,550 is the minimum bid, or is that the actual minimum bid?
That's the minimum bid. Brian looks at the low blue book and then takes the 12% off that we'd have to give the auction, and then that's where we start the bidding for employees.
And then
so if nobody bids that, we send it to auction.
All right. And it's a sealed auction in that each person gets one chance, sealed bid. It gets submitted. You look through all the envelopes one time. If nobody was over, it just goes to auction. There's no second round.
You know, we've never had one. Well, I've been here go to that, so I can't answer that directly. What they do is they send me an email, and I tell them to not put the dollar amount in the line, in the subject line. I want it in the body of the text, and then I don't open them till the morning of the whenever the deadline is.
Okay, that seems all reasonable. I don't think we have any concerns with this.
Board members can't bid, can they?
No, sorry, you can't.
But you know people that work at Mountain Regional.
I thought that's where Ian was going.
Right. Okay, so it doesn't. I don't think we have any POs tonight, do we, Lisa?
No POs, but we could get an approval of that to surplus that auction or to surplus the Escape. A motion to
okay. Can we just, what if we approve the consent agenda?
Yes, sorry, I forgot it was in the consent agenda this time. That's fine.
Okay, I think we're ready for a motion to approve the consent agenda, please.
So moved.
That's Ian.
Second.
And a second from Karen. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, that was unanimous. Item four. We're going to get a look at the budget for next year. Steve, will you take us through that?
Yep. I'm going to share my screen. So we're going to use the PowerPoint to kind of move us through the larger report that was also part of the packet just a little more efficiently. So everything in the PowerPoint relates back to the larger budget report, which you all received. So the schedule right now is we'll discuss the budget tonight. If we need to make any changes or amendments, we'll make those and then present the tentative budget to the council on November 4th. Then it becomes public for a period of time, and then the council right now has scheduled us to come back on December 2nd to adopt the budget formally for next year. So those are kind of the two key dates after tonight.
Who attends on those two dates? Just yourself, or who else do you need there?
Scott and I will present, and Lisa will also be available, is my understanding of how that will work.
Okay.
So looking at how our revenue fluctuates, you're all very familiar with this now. The weather plays a big impact on the water sales, the building economy on impact fees, and then the absorption of Silver Creek Village.
Hey, Steve.
The absorption in the report, you'll see that we do have 58 units over there now taking water. A lot of those are connected but not taking much water because they haven't been purchased.
Just so you know, we don't see your screen.
Oh.
At least I don't.
I don't see it either.
Oh, sorry, guys. This will make a lot more sense now, right?
There we go. It was a good start, Steve. Just keep right on going.
Okay. All right. So that was the first about the two key dates, November 4th and December 2nd, and then talking about this. So just the fluctuations in revenue based on water sales and weather, impact fees based on building economy, and then the absorption of Silver Creek Village. And in the report, I just want to point out that we do show 58 units connected for water right now over there and another 42 under construction. That's basically they've paid their deposit. So once they pay their deposit, they usually start to move pretty quickly. So it's hard to say exactly how that fits into what we're projecting. When we project for a whole year. And these units kind of came on late in the year. We only had 20 units projected for this year. But we have projected them for 12 months. So, but I guess more or less a little better than what we probably think. Revenue projections for the new budget, we're going on a 4-year average now. Last year we used a 5. So we're using 17 through 2020, which it gets us just one wet year and 3 dry years. The previous 5 years had been 2 wet and 3 dry. So you'll see our usage, the model's predicting a little higher usage than historically. Rate stabilization, the unrestricted cash reserve is averaging over 300 days. That's the one that has to be above 120. In some calls Lisa and I did early on in COVID, one of the questions they would ask a lot of the water systems is, how many days reserve do you have? More than I anticipated actually responded that they had a year's worth. There were some that weren't in as good a shape, but it seemed fairly common that water utilities are probably a little more prepared than others or were able to handle the COVID crisis.
Steve? Yes. On the revenue projection based on 4 years, when you're basically cutting out one of the wet years, you're making this a more optimistic outlook then, aren't you?
Correct. And we'll hit that a little bit. From budget last year for water sales, we're looking at about a 7.8% increase. So that's 2 to 3% from growth and another 5% from basically more usage. So it did make us be a little more aggressive. And you'll see how that kind of works here in just a couple of slides. But definitely a good question. Yeah, it is more optimistic. Expenses that are largely fixed, you know, our big ones are debt service, our Weber Basin lease fees, which are almost $2 million a year, and then power that's, you know, around $700,000 a year, $700,000 to $800,000. For COVID, the county's been very interested in COVID and its impacts on the different entities. So you guys already know this, but the district budget, largely, we weren't really impacted by it. Any decrease in commercial customers was offset by increase in residential. And our customers continue to pay really well. Even in September, our AR amount dropped, so we continue to collect very well. You know, the additional expenses we had for PPE were easily saved through decreases in travel and training and things like that. So this is just the overview. So section 3, corresponding to your report, will kind of set up the background. Section 4 will get into some specifics about operating revenue and expenses. Section 5 will hit the debt service budget, and section 6, the capital budget. So there's really those three budgets, the operating budget, debt service budget, and capital budget. And then we'll go over a few amendments we're going to need to make to the 2020 year. This slide that shows the consumption per culinary connection. So this is residential, commercial, all our culinary water connections. You'll see it is up to 158,000 gallons, so 0.49 acre feet this year, off of being quite a bit lower last year. The increase is due to the hot, dry summer. The interesting part is it was offset somewhat by the addition of the community water customers, because as them being townhomes and condos, they don't use as much per connection. So if I backed that out, our usage per culinary connection would have been just slightly higher than 2018. So earlier today, Scott and I were talking about doing a more in-depth analysis of this as we start the new year, to break down where our growth is going to come from, because that can move this number and how much water we'll actually end up needing to produce.
Hey, Steve, this is Tim again, and I'm a little slow on this, but can you back up two slides, please?
You bet. That one?
Yeah, this one, on the third bullet.
Yeah.
Is that something that you might have predicted, and if it's actually turning out differently, do you have any speculation on why?
You know,
you're comparing this against the collection rates of the past.
Yeah.
In 2019, you're seeing not only higher usage, but higher collection rates. And it is what it is. I'm not doubting it. But the reason I'm asking about whether you've speculated on this, does that matter to us? Maybe not.
It kind of doesn't, in that eventually we can lien any property for any unpaid water. But at the same time, it's nice to have the consistency and not have to worry about, you know, the shutoffs, or a lot of our customers are getting behind and having to turn over a big lien portfolio to the county when that time comes. You know, it's not as much a concern for cash flow as maybe you'd be in the private industry type of thing. But, and I have to admit, it was a little surprising, because some of those early COVID calls that Lisa and I were on, there seemed to be some real fear about this. I think what helped us was our residential population much more than commercial, because people still have to live and water, and we're staying home and using more water. I think water districts that had more commercial use, where a lot of businesses were shut down, were actually hit harder. with both usage and not, and people not being able to pay the bill. I think the other factor that helped us more than maybe originally anticipated was just the economics of Park City. People are have the wherewithal to pay their water bill.
But they always have, though, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. At times last year, you know, at the end of September, I think we had over $400,000 of AR outstanding. This year, it's under $300,000.
All right. Well, I guess you, I mean, thanks. I was just curious about that because it's turned out different than we were thinking it might be.
Yeah, we definitely were prepared for something worse, and then it's actually turned out better than what we thought.
Okay.
Lisa, you have any comments on that? Any thoughts?
No, I was just going to say that, you know, this has been, in, like Steve mentioned, a topic in all of the AWWA conferences that we've sat in on and financial, you know, reviews with other utilities. They've kind of been looking at, you know, revenue is one thing, but can you collect it? And so we've been making sure that we are, you know, keeping up to speed on that. And, you know, like Steve mentioned too, obviously we're in a different socioeconomic environment here. Really, like our customers are still paying the bill. They haven't been affected. Some other very urban areas and people with in areas with lower median household incomes, collections are down. And so that was definitely one of the surveillance questions from Fitch. A lot of their questions were surrounding COVID and collections. So something we wanted to point out and highlight as something different than we see normally in a year. I would attribute another thing to our collections is Anna and I have been working really hard to try to really monitor and stay on top of people who were getting a little bit late in payment. And I'm not sure that's it's always been a practice, but I'd say I've jumped in and Anna and I have definitely worked together to try to get letters out and contact people and just try to make payment arrangements, whatever we can do to try to reach that customer before we get 120, 150 or into a lien situation. Just trying to clean that up on the front end, then having to wait till the end to go through that process. So I would say I think there's a little bit of that going on as well.
Okay, well, thank you. Great. Any questions about the usage slide before I move on from that? Okay. So as kind of showing the variability of our water revenue, this is a comparison to original budgets. So you'll see in our 2020 projection, we are coming in quite a bit above budget because of the hot, dry year. You'll see last year we were actually under the original budget. And then we were over several years before that because they were hot, dry years. So now, kind of going back to that earlier slide, when you look at 17, 18, 19, and 20, those are the 4 years we're averaging. So basically three high revenue years and one that was wet and cooler. So that's why our projections would be more optimistic. So this is where we kind of stand. So the blue is history of retail water sales. You'll see the 2020 budget was the $8.44 million. Right now we're projected at $9.28 million. So a gigantic jump from actual 2019. And then 2021 budget is $9.1 million. So the $9.1 million comes from the 2% residential growth assumption, the 1% commercial growth, and then as kind of mentioned earlier, a 7.8% increase from budget 2020. So that's where kind of the playing, you know, usually if usage is flat and everything like that, 2 or 3% growth would be natural because that's how many customers we grow, but we're being a little more aggressive in what we think they'll use. So keep this in mind as we, as 2020 projected and 2021 budget as we get to the usage in just a couple of slides. Any questions on that one? That all makes sense to people? Okay. It's tough without a crowd. So this is impact fees. You'll see on the left is connections that generate those impact fees and on the right, the revenue. Our connections are, you know, projecting right now at 110. For next year, we're projecting 104 based off the 10-year average. the one thing I'd like to point out is that even though they're related, the connections to the impact fees, it's not a direct correlation anymore because of a few changes we've made. First, or a few changes that are happening. With the impact fee dropping last year, that has brought the average per down, as well as so many prepaids being used over in the Silver Creek area. So if you do the math, connections are down about 25%, but revenue is down more like 46%. And that's really just a factor of the lower impact fee and all the prepaids being used. For next year, we are going to budget the $600,000. We're kind of using what we're seeing to try to project that more than, you know, if we did a 10-year average right now, it may not be realistic to what we would see in 2021. Our big hope is next year the employee housing over near the canyons comes in, and that they're going to stage that in, but that would do a lot to getting us to budget next year. So, any questions? Oh, okay. Whoops.
Steve, I'm sorry. Well, what would be the impact of the workforce housing there?
Right now, Scott, and I think the total number is about $800,000 in impact fees. Is that correct, Scott?
Correct. A little.
But they have talked about phasing it in over time, correctly? Correct?
So the total value is a little over $800,000. I do believe my understanding is that they're going to pull – Steve, you're correct in that they're going to phase the construction, but I do understand that they will pull the building permits for all buildings at once. You know, based on conversations, it sounds like they're going to try to break ground in the spring. So if that does happen and they do, in fact, pull all building permits at once – that project alone would push us over budget.
Okay.
So, wow. Yeah, that's a huge swing next year, depending on when and if, I guess, they break ground on that. So, good question, Mike.
Thank you. Okay.
All right.
Keep going.
So our two major water contracts for next year, the Weber Basin regionalization is through to Summit Water, and then the Park City Wheeling. Through the rate that was approved on October 8th for 2021, we're predicting $1.9 million now, compared to $1.7 basically this year. And then the Park City Wheeling, anticipating them using roughly the same amount of water and generating roughly the same amount of revenue. So we haven't changed the budget there. Probably the key thing to keep in mind when we're looking at this slide, and especially when we get in front of the council, is the difference between how these rates are arrived at. In the Park City, they only take raw water that only runs through our Lost Canyon facility, whereas the water we send to Summit Water goes through Lost Canyon to the treatment plant through our distribution to Summit. The other factor is that Park City pays their own water lease fees directly to Weber Basin, and whereas the water we send through to Summit, we pay the lease fees and then add that into the rate that we charge them. So I think we're, because we've been through this so many times the last couple of years, probably well aware, but it's just something we want to always highlight that these are apples and oranges. We can't compare them straight across on a rate.
But it really makes it look like that surplus water is a bargain if you treat it and pay the lease fee. There's not that much difference between them, right?
Well, the money is more, and the acre feet is less. So there is a pretty good.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I was comparing the 1.9 and the 1.7, but that's...
Oh, yeah. Sorry, that was all of Weber... That was Weber Basin this year versus Weber Basin next year.
Yeah, they're significantly different, and it's going to be really important for Steve and I to really hammer that home that, as Steve said, these are apples and oranges.
Yeah, I got you. Thank you.
All right. So looking at total production for this year and next year. You can see the actual production. You'll see that what we're projecting for next year is very close to this year. So even though this was a hot, dry year, when we start averaging air and with customer growth, right now our projections are very close. If you kind of look at the blue, MRW will be projecting about the same as this year. Golf is projecting about the same as this year. You know, and then it's just, let's see, the gray is Park City taking about the same. And then the top part is of the graph is the 1,100 acre feet of Summit water that remains the same. So wait to be seen, but it looks like this year and next year may be very similar is what we're kind of predicting at this point. Okay, moving on to kind of cash balances and where we're at. Our bond reserves, our rate stabilization funds, as we describe them, the three component, we have the bond reserve, basically the rate stabilization fund that we just keep holding in case of a need to access that in a time of a low revenue year. It just kind of stays at that balance with just interest adding to it at this point. Treatment plant operations, we spent quite a bit of money out of this account this year, so the balance is down to $128,400. It accrues up to $750. Basically, we put money into it until it hits that point, and at that point, we would stop. Right now for 2021, we're not predicting any purchases of carbon or membrane. Our next purchase will be in 2022 of carbon, and probably we're going to regenerate it, and depending on how much comes back, but I think we're looking at about $115,000 then. The Lost Creek Canyon Repair.
Can I ask a question about that? Because
you bet.
It seemed a little counterintuitive when I was looking at it on the budget. It seems like it's what, $135,000 a year?
Correct.
And then this year we're going to spend like $200,000. So it just seems like the way it would work is you put in $135,000 a year into this fund and then you take the actual expenses out of that. But it seemed like instead we were putting more in because we spent more this year.
We still put the same amount in. We just take, well, we start with putting in the same amount, but we take out what we use. This is something Lisa and I talked about with the auditor last year. There's a thought of basically making this a prepaid that we expense each month. But the way we've been doing it kind of works well. It kind of evens out the budget every year, and then we can just adjust to the debt ratio. However much we overspend, we can add back into the debt ratio to help it. But it is not intuitive to do your normal prepaid and expense it over the life of the asset, let's say, or value of the contract. Karen, there would be another way to do this, let's say.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I was just not understanding it or if it really didn't make sense.
No, it's a little bit of a, I wouldn't say a unicorn, but it's a little different than maybe it might be handled in other situations. Lisa, do you want to input?
And typically we don't have them both hit in the same year. So normally it's one or the other. So this year it happened that we had both of them, the carbon and at the same time. So we kind of hit the reserve hard and drew it down quite a bit this year. Next year we're not going to take any. So on the expense side, I mean, we are kind of prepaying it because we're showing, you know, the 135 every year. I mean, even next year we'll show technically there's zero expense, but we're going to contribute 135. And we show that as actual expense, what we fund the reserve with. So I would say normally we kind of are close, that number of what we're depositing and what we're actually spending is closer. It's just this year and next year we're really out of whack because we hit two in 1 year. And next year there's going to be nothing.
So next year you will contribute $135,000 to the fund.
Correct. And that will be $135,000 of expense shown in the treatment plan budget.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you. All right. And the Lost Canyon Creek for the major repairs there, that's the fund that we and Park City put into. It's about $600,000 right now. Both us and Park City can stop putting money into it once it gets to $1 million max. So going to look at our debt coverage ratio projected for this year and what budget is telling us for next year, this is the important 1.25% that really ends up driving whether we need to have rate increases or not often. Right now, 2020 is projected to be 1.83. Our budget for next year would project 1.64. So that would be enough to fund capital projects and move forward. Just as a reference point, for 2020, we had budgeted 1.5. So we're budgeting just slightly. We should turn out just a little better next year than we budgeted for 2020. 2020, the 1.83 comes from the high water sales. Okay. Cash unrestricted. So this is what we can spend on whatever we want. It's kind of stabilized there at the end of, as you kind of see, we're kind of averaging just over that 300 days pretty consistently now. You'll notice the spike at the end of summer 2019 wasn't quite as dramatic as you'd maybe seen in the previous years because we didn't have a lot of water sales in 2019 to collect. So we're probably thinking it's going to stay right around here is our desire for the foreseeable future. Our debt reserves that we hold, so this includes the assessments with promontory impact fees and the rate stabilization fund, are growing. The one thing is we do have some impact fees that will still come out either the end of this year or the beginning of next year as some of these projects finish. So that'll help bring this fund down a little bit. It's good that we have a large fund because it gives us a lot of cushion, but at the same time, we don't want to be holding on to too much cash. So we're going to keep looking at ways to use our impact fees. This is capital facility reserve. So every year, we put 5% of our expense budget into this capital facility reserves. We target between that $750,000 and $1 million. It's gotten kind of high this last year or so, but before the end of the year, we should be pulling about $320,000 out for Cove Line and Nugget well repairs. And then in 2021, we have $615,000 budgeted for the Kilby Line project, which we'll talk about a little bit later. So with those two amounts coming out, we'll be just barely over $1 million. Then we'll put a little bit back in from the 5% for next year. So next year, this will be still probably a little above $1 million, maybe 1.3, but it won't be as far above it as you see today. Okay. On personnel and compensation, there are no new positions the district is proposing for this year. We will be filling one vacant position, our GIS specialist, which we'll hit when we hit the expenses in more detail in a minute. And then we're recommending a 1% COLA and a 2% average merit.
And Steve, just pause there for one moment, if you would.
Okay.
So just so the board understands, the Summit County is not doing any increases at year end this year. Tom Fisher is just being really careful with the budget projections that they're looking at for 2021. Lisa and I did meet with Tom. And we did discuss this. We shared with them what we thought was an appropriate balance between us being sensitive to the position the county's in and to the fact that we don't want to get our salaries out of whack with the counties. Yet, you know, we have delivered more water this year than ever before, and we'd like to offer some appreciation, some award to our employees moving into 2021. Tom will be reviewing the county's budget at mid-year. He is hopeful to try to do a pay adjustment, a pay increase for county employees, but at this point, time will tell. I think the takeaway is that, again, we did meet with Tom, we shared this with him, and you know, he was comfortable with our approach.
Thanks, Scott. So looking at our 2021 tentative budget.
Oh, sorry. I had one more comment. Sorry. We need to probably add to this slide. I don't think we call it out. And it just came to me as we were talking about this. The other thing that we budgeted for this year was the additional, our end of year bonus, our annual bonus amount. Last year through our policy amendment, we made a change that we could max that out at $1,500 per employee. And for the 2021 budget, we have included $1,500 per employee for compensation. We don't have to do that. We just want to include it to, you know, at our discretion if we decide that that's warranted at the end of the year. But I don't believe we have that called out here separately. We probably need to add that to the deck report, Steve.
I'll get it in here. Thank you, Lisa. All right.
Did you add anything in there about benefits too, Lisa?
That might be another good point. We, fortunately, our health insurance, we're self-funded and we're part of the county's pool. And we will have no increases to premiums this year. The plan has been performing really well. Not a lot of people have gone to the hospital this year, and the reserves in the county's health insurance account are adequate, even probably better than they should be. So the health insurance is staying, and other than that, all of our other benefits are remaining constant. But that is a good point. We should add that as well, Steve.
Okay.
That's in there somewhere, because I know that I read that in the notes somewhere.
Yeah, I think it was, well, it's hard to distinguish sometimes. I know it was in the main package.
Yeah. So it's probably...
It might have been in a department update.
Yeah, that too, yeah.
Okay, so we'll just make sure we get it in this presentation. Thank you.
All right. So looking at our operating revenue for next year, we're up 8.8%, $979,000. So $655,000 of that is from retail water sales. That's 7.8% we've talked about. The regionalization water will generate an additional $238,000 over last year, 14.2%. And then the other one that has a nice increase to it is operating fees. As we looked at some historical trends, I think we'd maybe been under budgeting this a little bit, so we're going to bump that up to more of what we've seen. The other factor that plays into that is even though we don't get a lot of impact fee revenue out of Silver Creek, we still get a lot of meter fee revenue out of there because they still have to pay for their $1,800 for their 3/4-inch meter. So that's where the full $979,000 growth for next year comes. So I think back to Tim's earlier comment, that's pretty optimistic when you're growing your budget $1 million, your revenue $1 million from 1 year to the next. But all the signs are that we can hit that. So that's what we're going to go plan on. So, all right.
Steve, what was that $1,800 a year that?
Oh, sorry. I said something that wasn't on the slide. So each meter connection is for a 3/4-inch meter connection, they pay $1,800. So for example,
flat rate annual?
No, that's just one time to get their meter installed.
Okay.
So for example, if we have 100, you know, and they're only 3/4-inch, that'd be $180,000 of just meter fees. And
if
so Silver Creek
wants to make those connections.
Yeah. And they pay that at the same time they pay their impact fee.
Okay, thank you.
You bet. On the non-operating revenue, we actually are going to need to show a little bit of a decrease here. Interest on our PTIF accounts is, I'm trying to find a better word, but it's really low. Dismal. So you'll see in 2019, we made over $400,000, that far column to the left off of interest. Right now, we're projecting 172 for the end of this year, and next year, 122,000. And I'm actually getting a little nervous about that. So let's hope some of those long-term returns on the things the PTIF can invest in comes back a little bit. So the budget drops there. We are adding $100,000 back into our impact fee budget. We only budgeted $500,000 last year. And then the promontory adjusts just slightly on their debt schedule payment, basically. So that's where the $30,000 decrease comes from. So we can't lean on our interest earnings quite as much as we've been able to the last couple of years, unfortunately. So, all right, operating expenses. That's kind of, yes.
Just for my edification, it's $122,000 on how much revenue that's invested? What is that in terms
it's, of? It's about 0.5% is the return right now. In January, the return was about 3%. So, in January on our funds, I'm just pulling up something really quick.
And that's invested through that Utah.
Yeah, the public invests. Oh, I forget the name.
Okay. Public so trust. You don't really have much control over it. You're going to put it into that fund, and it's just going to return when it returns.
Yeah, we don't. As a public entity, we can't really mess around with that too much.
Okay. All right. Never mind. I was just curious on how much that was.
Okay. So yeah, it's dropped dramatically from over $20,000 in interest we made in January to under $10,000 in September. So, all right. On our operating expense, so energy and resource management, we had some savings there this year, which we're going to talk about in a minute. But next year, the budget is increasing. Mainly, we're going to hire a GIS specialist before the end of the year is the goal. And then there's also some other expenses that have kind of been increasing or moving to that department, including just more for our cloud services, including, as we all have these Badger meters, there's a charge every month. And then also our document management system. We're looking to contract with Les Olson to provide our document management system. They provided a really nice presentation. Lost Canyon, if you look at just the budget for 2020 and the budget for 2021, there's only a 4% increase, although the one column shows what would be a larger increase. It's because Lost Canyon ended up being fairly inexpensive this year. They haven't maximized their power because of some efficiencies and not having to run. We always have some contingency built in for power there, and they also didn't have any large repair costs. So basically for 2021, we just have to reestablish the contingency and the potential repair costs in the budget. Everything else kind of in operation stays fairly close. You'll notice there are some savings in next year's budget in the non-operations departments. Engineering, we've kind of solidified savings that they've found there as they've taken the water treatment position and kind of been able to spread it over departments. I think Sam and Scott and some people in distribution have kind of absorbed that. So that leads to a nice permanent decrease. You'll see a decrease in public services. That's with some of the personnel changes that happened at the end of this year with Marty's retirement and just some reshuffling of things.
Steve, where do you account for the this arrangement that we have with Rocky Mountain Power and their solar array? Where does that show up on this sheet?
It's built into several places. Lost Canyon is a big part of the expenses in there. Distribution, we spend a lot of money on distribution and then at the treatment plant. So probably 30% Lost Canyon, 30% distribution, treatment plant, maybe 20%, and I'm not adding up to 100%. So maybe it's 40, 40, and 20, let's say.
Steve, but we're going to be paying more for power.
Yes. So, Tim, Steve and Tim, if you don't mind, I can jump in. So, Tim, we won't see those costs until 2023. So, starting in 2023, they're going to go up to, you know, whatever it was, 2.37%, I think it was.
So we'll get those built in when those kick in.
So, it's 2023 we're talking about. Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right. And then you'll see depreciation. We had underestimated our 2020 budget, mainly because when the community water assets came on, they were valued at a little bit more, a little higher than we projected, and so that increased our depreciation expense more than we had anticipated. Not a cash expense, but still there was an adjustment needs to be made there. All right. Non-operating expenses, you'll see basically we're starting to see the savings from the refinance that Lisa spearheaded at the end of 2019, that we all, of the $130,000 in 2021. So that's kind of just highlights that. From here on, it'll just always be lower, but this kind of helps highlight the savings from that refinancing. So, like I mentioned earlier, the debt service budget for next year looks good. 1.53 when we involve all our debt. So that includes the things with Zions for property and equipment, and 1.64 if we just look at the parity debt, which is what the 1.25 is required. So that the plan next year is that'll generate about $2 million in cash. About a little under 400 will be put into capital facilities reserve. The other 575,000 more or less will go to regionalization reserves, and the million will fund capital budgets for the next year.
Can I ask a question about regionalization reserves?
Yes.
Okay, so it said that this started in 2015, and then we take 30% of the regional water supply revenue, and that goes into the regionalization reserves. Do we pay the $245,000 that we pay every year to the regionalization out of those reserves, or do those reserves just kind of accumulate?
So far, we've let them accumulate because we've been able to absorb the $245,000 just in our normal cash flow. So right now, the regionalization reserves, yeah, we'll are still kind of there to pay that. Most likely what we'll do is to use that to prepay some debt, because that helps our ratio the most, which helps us avoid a rate increase to our customers. So that's kind of the plan for those regionalization reserves. As they continue to grow, we can spend some of those down to get rid of some debt that'll help the two ratios up above here. So, you know, with the goal of pushing out any rate increase just as far as we can through the reserves we have.
Remind me, Steve, is that mandated by the county or the state or something?
The regionalization? That was just our control board. It was just a good idea to plan and do something with that money from the regional water supply.
I was going to mention that using those funds are completely at the discretion of the board. We don't need authority from council bondholders. So we originally set that up to prepay debt, help put off a rate increase if we needed to, or use it to cover those regionalization fees. If we determine next year that we want to use some of that for a capital project, or something comes up that we would like to do, the control board can make that decision to use those funds or allocate those
funds. How much are those funds?
They're right around 2 million right now. I think what we'd like to do is I believe it's 2023, in December of 2023, we can prepay, like Steve mentioned, some of that parity debt, which is the 2014 bond. So we could, you know, depending how things look over the next couple of years, we could take a large chunk of that and prepay some of that debt.
And that coincides closely with what we're kind of projecting as a potential next rate increase. So if we can use those funds, maybe we can push that out a little bit further. So, all right. So we're going to jump to the capital budget. So probably the column to focus on is the one highlighted in pink or rose color, whatever we want to call that. So let's go down to the kind of the bottom section. So capitalized personnel costs for next year is the $217,000. That's employees' wages that we can allocate to capital projects. Then we're going to add an additional $305,000 to our general system and improvements. That'll give us, with the carry forward, the last column, the $531,000. So next year, our plan for the general system improvements, which you maybe all saw in the packet, are engineering design fees for things at Summit Park, the treatment plant, Lost Canyon, some pump station capacitor upgrades, and some improvements in the Middle Valley Pump and Promontory. So that's kind of where that $531,000 is going forward. The Willow Creek Atkinson Interconnect, which you probably saw some Sam talking about that a little bit. It's started, it's going. We're just not sure if we're going to make the payment this year, so that's why we're carrying that forward. The Weber Basin Interconnect project, which Ian, you were asking about the check earlier. For all of the interconnects, our original estimate was $500,000. The latest estimates from Weber Basin have it more towards $560,000, so that's why we're requesting $60,000 there to be added to that budget. The vehicles and equipment, we're asking for $245,000, and that is made up of two larger trucks, F-350s, that can haul around our equipment, a new vac trailer to haul around. They've been renting one this year and kind of tested it out, and they've kind of come to a decision they'd really like this one. That's $95,000. And then SCADA upgrades of $50,000. So $100,000 for two trucks, $95,000 for the back trailer, and then $50,000 for SCADA upgrades. An item we're adding to the budget this year, or 2021 capital project, is the Silver Creek Maintenance and Storage Yard. So over where we built the big tank and drilled the well, we've done some preliminary. The guys have done some preliminary moving around of the dirt. We want to put some garages, material storage bay, some internal storage, and really have that as a nice place where we can protect equipment, store equipment, take advantage of putting some materials there so we can just go there to pick them up. So, and just kind of continue the development of that site. Scott, did you want to add anything to that? I mean...
No, I think you covered it, Steve. We don't have an appropriate place to store equipment. You know, we've got a bunch of trucks parked out in the yard there, and it's time, you know, we have the means to be able to, you know, have a more formal staging area there.
Okay. The Kilby Road water line replacement, that's the capital facility reserves I was talking about next year that we're going to spend. So that's the line that serves Summit Park that we're going to visually inspect and replace sections that need to be. Because of the soil over there, there's been a lot of damage to that pipe, and we think we're losing quite a bit of water as we try to send it up to Summit Park. Kilby pump upgrades, that's moving the electrical works from down in the ground where the water pipes basically are to above ground. to separate that. It'll be better, safer for our employees, so we want to get that completed next year. And then at the treatment plant, the $140,000 here is more, we need to repair the insulation on the ceiling. It's starting to fall down in a few areas. Let's see what else. Stain the outside of the building, and we're going to have to redo the asphalt after putting in the generator, digging through it, and it just is kind of getting old. So that's the $140,000 there. So with the carryover, then we're asking for the $2 million to be added to it for our capital projects in 2021.
So the Kilby Road thing, is that really for Summit Park?
It's the pump station that moves water up to Summit Park, Bob. That's correct.
So how much money have we spent in total supplying Summit Park with water?
I don't have that.
Replacement lines, all these homes that we've had to dig up and replace because the things went across our driveways and all that kind of stuff.
I don't have that number on the tip of my tongue. But I understand
right
your
here
point.
We're spending $1 million just in 2 years. Right?
That also goes
to
support.
We spent $450,000 this past year, and we're going to spend $615,000 next year. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Any customers we have up there?
Fortunately, we get a lot of base and very little usage out of there, so they're a good revenue source too. At some degree, but that is a fair amount of money. But yeah, they do generate quite a bit of revenue for us too, without being too much of a drain on our water resources, let's say.
Hey Steve.
How much more do we have to go?
Brian, did you have a comment?
Yeah, hey, I just wanted to make a comment that this line that we want to replace, we inherited that line from Gorgoza, and that line is basically falling apart.
So when we take these lines from people like Gorgoza, I mean, do we not have an inspection and factor that into why we're taking it and that kind of stuff?
It was not inspected back in the day, but it had to do something with a water right trade.
Okay.
That line also will serve Discovery, correct?
Yes.
A big development that's going in up there.
That's correct.
Not just Summit Park.
It also serves Timberline.
And Timberline, right.
And so how much do those developers pay us for improving the infrastructure to supply them?
They pay the standard impact fee. Most of the facilities, most of the development over there in Discovery is a full one ERC. Not very many are more than one ERC.
I think, you know, Bob, the root of your question, right, is how do we handle repair and replacements, right? And I think that's something that we as a district are going to be faced with, just like all water utilities, you know, as we go into the future. So I think that the approach has been that we do that out of district funds and we don't do assessments on a per neighborhood basis.
Right, I understand that. It just seems like as we take over some of these systems, we're getting a pretty hefty liability that, you know, has to be absorbed by all the ratepayers. You know, it's one normal repair and replacement. Yeah, lines are going to wear out. And that ought to be a part of our, you know, rate base, if you want to think of it that way, that we're constantly putting money away to replace lines that we know are, you know, going to deteriorate over time. Nothing lasts forever. Just seems we get burdened with some of these things that are, you know, deficiencies by the original water systems and by the original developers, and we get stuck with the liability rather than the homeowner getting stuck with the liability.
I would say that's true.
It's kind of our mission, though, too.
Well, yes. It's to make the water available. It's not to have everybody you know, make up for the mistakes of some developer or somebody else along the way too. You know, I think there's a differentiation in there between, you know, our mission, which is to make water available. It's not to correct the mistakes of poor construction from prior developers or whatever.
Some of that construction wasn't ever intended to last. Some of it was just supposed to be for summer homes, and it wasn't going to be up to standards.
Well, I don't know about all that.
All right, so keep going, Steve.
Okay. We did have some savings in some of our projects from 2020. The Summit Park restoration came in $250,000 lower than we'd budgeted. So we're asking for an amendment to be able to move that down to our land acquisition and office development line. We had some savings in Glen Wild Pumps.
Sorry, Steve. Is the Summit Park restoration, is that the kind of the cooperation with the county?
Yes, exactly. Where we're saving money by piggybacking on their project. So when they dig up the road, we get it. They also put in new lines where we need them and things like that. So we had some savings.
That was that was sort of an annual program, isn't it?
This was phase six, Scott. I believe this completes the current plans over there. Is that not correct? Is that correct?
It started every other year. Yeah, it started as an every year program. It has since moved into an every other year program. I think the big deficiencies are taken care of. I know Brian still has some areas that he'd like to see improved as we go forward. So no, we're not done.
The Glen Pump Station upgrades, we were able to save $60,000 there. We decided to do that project internally instead of contracting that out, so we were able to realize some savings. So we're moving that to cover that additional cost in Willow Creek. And our office improvements, we had a little savings there that we're moving down to just general system improvements. All right.
I guess my general comment is, I think $4.5 million capital budget for us is a pretty damn big capital budget. I have questions about whether we can manage it adequately and, you know, what's going to happen in 2022, because I don't think that kind of level is sustainable.
You know, some of the projects that are adding to that 4.5 are kind of close to finishing. The Weaver Basin and some of, so we won't be necessarily having to manage all of that in 2021. Yeah, there will be definitely, we'll have our hands full, I would say, still, Scott, with the things we are planning to do, but when the money's generated and we can spend it to upgrade our system and put in reserves, that's what we do with the money, right? As a public entity.
Yeah, I think some of it that's shown here, as Steve said, is projects that are really going to be completed this year. There's also a pretty significant line item there on the land acquisition for the office that we have just been contributing to kind of each year as we go forward. The latest timeline for that I've heard from Tom Fisher is likely 2022, but we are showing it in the 2021 budget and we'll continue to carry it forward if it does push back to 2022. So I think, you know, Bob, you know, point well taken. I think this number is a bit misleading though.
Sure. Bob, is your concern on just the day-to-day management of the infrastructure improvement, the personnel that it takes to get out there and oversight it?
That's a large part of it.
I see your point. I mean, if we're going from a 2 million to a 4 million,
and you got a lot of that, like in community water infrastructure, you know, capitalized personnel costs is one thing. You got $500,000 in general systems improvements that has to be managed. You know, I mean, land acquisition, I grant you, is kind of a one-time check.
And for that,
you know, you still got to
inspectors.
Yeah, you still got to know what you're buying and why you're buying it and what you're going to put on it. You know, just to right. take $500,000 worth of property off the county's hands because they want somebody to take it doesn't necessarily, you know, mean you don't have any planning, et cetera, right? Yep. You got a $450 million shed, storage yard going in, that takes management.
Yep. So you're hitting at a point we've been talking about internally is contracting for inspectors, how to handle inspection work, you know, and I don't think we have our thumb on the solution yet, but it is an ongoing concern with us, you know, internally as well.
Okay. Enough said for me.
All right. We're almost to the end. Thanks for hanging on, everybody.
I'm sorry, Steve, but last year the capital budget was 6.2, and is it going to be 4.6 this year?
You could look at it that way, yes, with the rollover and then the new additions. The 6.1 last year did have the full 2.6 million of community water, and the 4.5 we have 600,000 of community water. Because 2 million of it should mm-hmm. be done and paid by the end of the year is what we're anticipating.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. So the last, I think last two slides, maybe two or three slides. We're going to do a few budget amendments. We did have some additional costs in distribution this year as with the high usage, lots of repairs, lots of meter purchases. Distribution's a little bit is over their budget, $168,500. We do have savings in Lost Canyon that can just offset that. So those two offset. Then the depreciation, the $60,700 near the bottom in the pink, where depreciation of non-cash expense was higher than we expected, we actually have cash savings in energy technology management and energy engineering and development to offset that. So no change in overall expenses, just some rearranging of where those expenses happened. Then we have an amendment that we're going to do for the interest earnings coming in so low. And also with the refinance right at the end of 2019, there was a slight miscalculation in the interest offsets, so our interest expense was a little higher than we budgeted. So we have the higher interest and lower interest earnings, slightly higher interest expense, but they're both offset by additional impact fees and other non-cash operating, such as inspection fees. So just a little bit of rearranging, but nothing that'll cause any heartburn, I would believe. So lastly, budget for 2020, we started with the ratios of 1.4 and 1.5. Looks like we're going to finish 1.71 and 1.83. So we've had a good year managing the finances, always with the benefit of weather helping out this year. But I think you can see where we've cut some of administrative costs and done what we could there. So that's the budget as it stands. So if there are any comments or more thoughts we want to discuss, we do need to have this tentative budget all finalized for the presentation to Summit County on November 4th.
Is this what you will show to the county, Steve?
This will kind of lead the discussion. They'll receive the report much like you did, Bob, and then we try to use this to lead them through the discussion. So if your thoughts are, you know, if you have some comments on what might be taken out or added to or explained better, I'd be more than welcome to hear those.
I'm just curious as to how much time they allocate to this.
I think they give us about an hour. Is that right, Scott and Lisa, or maybe not?
No, 30 minutes. You're going to have to speed it up.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It seems a little... and I would expect it to be, you know, we'll have more questions and that kind of stuff, but
it goes pretty quick. They don't have too many comments generally, so it goes.
They're pretty much in download speed rather than upload.
Yes.
Okay, next year, I'll try to go faster.
Any other... So were there any other questions for Steve on the proposed budget?
I thought it was good work, Steve.
Yeah.
Thanks. I'm standing on the shoulders of a lot of people who have come before me, I will admit.
So I think we're ready for a motion.
And what are we motioning? A recommendation to the County Council for acceptance of the budget and the amended budget for 2020?
That's exactly it, yes.
So moved.
That's fine. Bob?
Second.
Who was the second? Was Karen?
Yes.
Okay, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, I think that was unanimous. Nice work, you guys.
Thanks.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's always good to get this behind you.
Yeah. So, okay. Steve. I guess next in the financial is the review of the September monthly.
Financial. I'll just say it was what you expected, and then we kind of went over it during this a little bit with the projection. September revenue was basically the same as 2018 September revenue, and collections were good. So we're still projecting to be a little over $1 million better than budget by year end.
Okay.
How's that for succinct?
Good.
I think that's you had us well prepared to understand that. There's some information on the Fitch press release. And the change in our bond rating.
Yes, I'll just talk about that really quick. We had our regular surveillance review with Fitch. They did have some new ratings criteria they instituted this year for U.S. water and sewer ratings. They generally send us ten or 12 questions. We respond to them in a report. And then they follow up with any questions after they receive the report. It went really smooth this year, and we unexpectedly got an upgrade from a AA- to a AA, which largely is due to our customer base growing and our debt going down with the refunding that we did. And they look at a five-year forecast, so we provide them with a capital project five-year forecast, our forecast income statement, if you will, for the next 5 years. And we're looking pretty stable with rates as well as our debt. And they like to see that we didn't have a huge COVID impact this year. And we don't have any large capital projects looming due to some regulatory requirement. So, safe. Other thing that drives that is also just our adequate cash balances at this time. So, good news. Just wanted to provide the report, the final report for your review.
You know, just a quick question. Did we get any publicity on that at the paper or the radio station?
Scott's our spokesperson on the radio station.
We did not. We were trying to work on some publicity in other ways, but it was not on the rating upgrade.
So, Lisa, you say that it was attributed to increased customer.
Yeah, the debt per customer ratio has been generally very high for Mountain Regional. Our debt load is high for the number of customers we have due to, really us having to piecemeal these systems together in 2000. So that created quite a hefty debt burden. So as we start to add customers, that ratio starts to get better, and the ratings agencies look on that as a favorable thing. So that's one of the drivers of their upgrade.
And community water helped because we got a big chunk at once, right, Lisa?
Yeah, 500 customers.
And the debt was still associated with them. The special assessment. So anything else from the financial management team?
I think we're good.
Nice work, you guys. Okay, Sam, do you want to take us through item 5, the engineering update, please?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me share my screen here. Got a few photos to share.
We always finish strong with pictures from Sam.
Well, I saw Chris got in on that picture action this month, too. So
yeah.
I like it.
I was done getting shown up by Sam.
Can everybody see that? See my screen share okay there?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So I'll try and step through quickly. Just wanted to talk about our active engineering capital projects we still have going on. The Cove and Willow Creek water lines have kicked off and are going well. Again, these projects are going to give us some operational flexibility in the future and potentially some energy savings. So excited to see how they turn out. We've got a good contractor on board, and they were dragging their feet a little bit, wrapping up the work in Summit Park, which they were also on that contract. But since they've mobilized, they have a couple crews out that are active, and things are going really quickly. So we're pleased with that. We're still shooting to hope wrap everything up by the end of November. And have been working closely with Summit County to make sure we don't stub our toe with any sort of paving deadline. And also trying to keep our relationship up with Basin Recreation, as this could potentially have some impacts on the dog park. So this was a publicly bid project, about $300,000 or so. And yeah, we're anticipating this one to get wrapped up this year.
Sam, what is that? I have a quick question looking at that picture. The contractor is presumably responsible for OSHA compliance. Because my question is, looks like the ditch is taller than the man working in it and is not reinforced. And having worked my way through college laying water and sewer lines, I would have never been in that ditch under those circumstances.
That's a great comment, Bob, and maybe not the best picture to share in hindsight. But, yeah, on jobs like this, we usually leave it up to the contractor on larger safety issues. And as far as trench boxing and when to do so and when to not, especially in messy landscaped areas with a lot of other utilities, we leave it up to the contractor historically. But that is something to consider moving forward. I think that's a good comment.
Well, maybe the soil levels are different too.
Yeah. The Glenwild Booster Pump Station. Again, Glenwild Booster Pump Station is one of the pump stations on our North Ridge side of the system, as we call it, which is a number of systems stacked on top of each other, including Blackhawk, Redhawk, Glenwild, Stagecoach Preserve. And the current choking point from a capacity perspective is the Glenwild Booster Pump. So this upgrade is looking to the future and making sure we have enough capacity to get it up the hill in the future. We're performing this one in-house with our pumping facilities operators, Brandon and Kim, doing the heavy lifting on install, fabrication, etc. And they're just a tremendous resource we have here in-house. And one of the really cool things I think about the district and why I like working here so far is, you know, our ability to do something like this in-house. And it's been a lot of fun working on the pump selection and working and learning from those guys. This one is also scheduled to get completed this year. We're working on scheduling with adjacent property owners. The nature of the installation is such that a few folks will have to be shut off of service only for a day. But we're going to work with the adjacent property owners and make sure that gets taken care of.
And a quick note for the board, these are the sensitive property owners that we worked through the easement acquisition on last year, and they have been working with us quite well from what I've been hearing. So.
Hey, yep. Very good, Sam. Everything else there on five?
What's that?
Keep going, Sam.
Sure. The Summit Park Master Plan got kicked off. This is kind of new for the district. We've typically done a lot of all our master planning in-house, so farming this out to Aqua. We're excited to see what a fresh set of eyes has to say, and hopefully it'll be a valuable exercise for us. This is not only looking at operations within Summit Park, but also some of our tanks and infrastructure, and things that are nearing the end of their design life, and we're trying to get ahead of that and have a plan how to move forward. And then our biggest project for the year we've been talking about a lot is the community water upgrades, the upper PRV building and waterline work. This has been a really challenging project. We've had some schedule delays, and so far some smaller changes to the contract, change order, price adjustments. We do have plenty of contingency worked into our funding and loan with the state to cover those. So it's nothing alarming, but I've definitely had some good lessons learned working on the project, and we're still hopeful we'll get to substantial completion by early November and be able to get to final completion. December sometime. There may be some punch list items regarding landscaping and things like that that might have to get pushed to the spring, but we definitely want anything up and operational as soon as possible. As far as equipping the new well adjacent to the Silver Creek tank, Brandon and Kim have completed most of the fabrication work inside the pump station building, and we're currently reviewing the submittal for a submersible pump for the well and finalizing a contractor to take care of the yard piping. So this one is moving along, and we're just hopeful to complete this in 2020 also. And the last one I want to touch on was our optimization study up at the plant. I'm really excited about this. Plant is absolutely critical to meeting future demands in the district, and really trying to optimize what we have before we think about expansion, I think it's the most prudent thing to do. We're working again with Jacobs, who's a national level engineering firm with experience treating Weber River water. So we've been getting them as much information as possible so we can kind of start the hands-on bench testing phase up at the plant. And then the last thing I wanted to touch on was just kind of my lessons learned from my first construction season with the district, things I think I can improve on in the future. This kind of came up previously with Bob's comment. The first part is on these large projects, especially like Hidden Creek, for example, a $600,000 publicly bid capital project, I don't think there's any reason not to go through a pre-qualification process on something like that. It isn't a very specific skill set, all the work, I would say, but just the effort and being on top of it on part of the contractors to get set up with the pre-qual process, I think will increase the quality of contractor that we come up with when we go with a low bid in the future. The second piece is on construction admin and inspection. Again, I think before we undertake a huge project like Hidden Creek, we really need to understand where the man or woman hours are coming from on the inspection side, and if we need to contract it out of house. I know my experience so far in Hidden Creek often has turned into almost a full-time effort out there, and if we're not geared up to that internally, I think it's very possible and probably the right way to go to maybe contract the inspection or look at other options. And then the last two things really have to do with scheduling. It seems like we've had a disconnect this year with schedule that's actually on the contract and schedule that's actually happening in the field. So in the future, I think I'm really going to try and close that loop. And internal projects, I think creating an internal schedule for everyone to stick to and have some good internal guidelines will help keep things on track and kind of eliminate this race at the end of the construction season. So that's where we're at with our 2020 projects. Overall, I think it's pretty positive and we're on the right track, but definitely room for improvement on my end and looking forward to doing so.
Thank you, Sam. That was well done. Any other questions there? Okay. Item six is legal. Sounds like Wayne isn't with the county anymore. So, and with Dave out, I think we're just going to skip that one for tonight. Is there anything there, Scott?
Nope, you got it, Mike. That's it.
Okay. So then, yeah, well, that's a nice transition for you on item seven, your general manager comments.
Thanks. I know this meeting's running long. I will try to keep this as quick as possible. I just would like the board to know we do have two terms expiring at the end of this year. Both Ian and Bob's terms are due to expire. I have spoken with both of them. Maybe each of you can just say a couple words about your intent.
Sure. I do not intend to seek a second term, so to speak. Partly health issues and partly we're going to be changing our residence to Florida, so I won't be eligible anyway. But it's been a real interesting and pleasurable experience for me to serve on the board for this term, and wish those who remain behind, you know, good luck and good sailing.
Thanks for that, Bob. You know, just so everybody understands kind of the process and what this means, first off, you know, a huge thank you to Bob. It's been an enormous asset from my perspective for the district. Process is that the vacancy will be advertised in December. The council will perform interviews in January, and Bob will continue to serve. He has offered to continue to serve until that position is filled. So if any board members have any recommendations on some folks in the community that they may know, or potentially speak to friends that you respect and see if we can't stir up some good candidates, I'd appreciate it.
And then I guess my intent is to reapply. I'd like to serve another term if possible. I've already connected with the county and expressed my intent there. And yeah, so I just plan on going through the same process I did last time, right, going that interview. I will be sad not going through that process with Bob. He's kind of been my buddy since we started together. And I'll be bummed to see you go, Bob.
Yeah, that's a...
I'll still be around. We're not selling our house or anything, but good. As I said, I've got some health stuff, and so we're going to be spending more time in Florida.
So where are you located?
The grandkids will still be here too, right, Bob?
Yes, which will continue to be a big draw, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Bob, where in Florida?
Pardon?
Where in Florida is your...
We're in an area on the Atlantic coast called Vero Beach.
Okay. Yeah, I spent a year in Orlando and spent quite a bit of time looking at those beaches, so I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. We're about 2 hours from the airport, from my front door to the Delta counter.
Nice.
You can see the rockets taking off then, huh?
We can. From my backyard, we can watch the rockets.
Yep.
You get a pretty good view, actually. It's surprising.
Yep.
All right, so that's all I have on that agenda item. If there's no further questions, just a couple other quick hitters here. This Wednesday was Imagine a Day Without Water. It's a national education campaign that Mountain Regional participated in. We hit the social media waves and the airwaves on the radio. I recorded a a PSA that aired a number of times this week, and then I was also on the radio Wednesday afternoon on Randy's show, just trying to thank our local water professionals and also just try to draw some awareness to the to what we're doing out there to try to keep everybody to safeguard the health of the community. So I think it went well. Next up is, just so the board knows, I met with Tom Fisher and David Ure a couple weeks ago just to keep those communication lines open. For those who may not remember, David Ure sits on Weber Basin's board in the Summit County seat. So he's an important person for us to maintain communication with. So that meeting went well. And then I continue to engage in the wildfire mitigation stakeholder groups that I'm a part of. And, this is definitely the long play, right? I mean, wildfire mitigation doesn't happen overnight, as I learn more and more every day. It's been a fun process to get engaged with a good group, and I think we're doing good things for the county. I hope it amounts to something, and time will tell.
What is Mr. Ure doing for us these days? Anything? Do we have a wish list in front of him?
No, I don't have a wish list in front of him. I think what he is very attuned to is any concerns or problems we have with Weber Basin. You know, he in the past has jumped in and helped us out at the board level there if we have issues. I don't have any current issues with Weber Basin. He also helps us to stay current with issues that Weber Basin may be aware of as it relates to parties of the master agreement and, sensitivities in our area, so.
Pat, is there anything in this thing you mentioned about the water rights to require all diversions from East Creek to be metered? Is there something sort of underlying that?
The underlying factor is, there's a lot of folks in the community that are concerned about low flows in East Canyon Creek.
Right.
And there's no way... You know, if the community, just to generalize, if the community wants to come together and pay for water to be deposited in the creek, right, to increase the flows, well, somebody's got to pay for it. And it's really hard for us to be able to understand what's needed if we don't understand the diversions coming out of the creeks, all right? So the first step, the bottom line is the creek's over-allocated. Okay, so it's not like understanding metering the diversions is going to solve the problem. You know, I don't think we're out to, catch somebody who's diverting too much water. As much as it is, we've got to understand who's diverting, how much they're diverting, to be able to understand how much more needs to be added to reach the target flows.
Okay, so it's not like homeowners dropping a pump over the side and watering their lawns in the summertime with it or something like that.
I mean, that may be happening to some extent, Bob, but I don't think that's
not the problem.
No. And that's all I have in my general manager comments. If there's no questions about those items, Mike, we can move into the department update questions.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you. That's good stuff. All right, so on the department updates, what we've done in the past is just go kind of around the table of and then to see who had questions. Karen, would you like to start us off with that, please?
Yes. So Leo Williams is retiring. What does he do? And what is your plan?
So Leo is the manager of the treatment plant. Leo's been with the district since the early days. I don't know the exact year, 2002-ish is my guess. And so we do have a transition plan. Brant Judd, who's been working under Leo for about a decade, is going to move into that general manager slot. And I've had conversations with Brant that
we're excited to give them the opportunity, but we will be, we do have that 6-month orientation period. I want to make sure that he's ready for that role and he's performing up to our standards. So we'll do a little internal staff shuffling during that first 6 months, just to make sure everybody's comfortable. And if we're comfortable with Brant's performance and he wants to stay in that role, then we will seek to hire a replacement to his previous operator seat.
Okay.
That's it.
All right, thank you. Bob, any department update questions?
Yeah, I just had a quick question on the Anna's report around the backflow. I didn't quite understand the flow of the numbers. So we had notifications sent in August of 1578 and in September 1235. Are some of those notices duplications, or are they follow-ups on notices that were sent earlier? And then it seems like we've had almost 3,000 notifications, but only 1,000 reports filed or completed.
Correct. We do send out multiple notices. You get one month before your backflows tests are due. We send them out the month they are due, and then subsequently after they're past due. And then this year with COVID, we just remind them that they do not need to have people in their house testing their fire suppression if they are not comfortable with it. But we do require the outdoor irrigation ones tested still.
Adam, what percentage of the connections get one of these notifications sent to them?
I haven't figured out the percentage. Most of the notifications are for the big areas that the development called for fire suppression. So like Colony, Promontory, Glen Wild, and then the other homes, it seems like it's at the discretion of the fire district if they require you to have it, such as the Preserve or Stagecoach.
So where would you say we are in compliance?
I think we're sitting pretty good. Most everyone has completed them by now. I'd have to really ask Stacy to look at her extension list. There are quite a few people who still ask for extensions, and it's usually just people who have shut down their irrigation prior to testing them in the fall.
Right. So this came up in my neighborhood recently, and it actually kind of proved that our program works. One of my neighbors got the notification and had it tested and found out that it was 20 years old and it needed to be replaced. So, you know, that's the point of this. And I went through and I read the backflow, I guess our ordinance, and it says that the way I understood it was that every connection is supposed to supply an inspection report every year. Is that right?
At the discretion of your, like, water purveyor. So, yes, you are correct that way.
But we are the water purveyor.
Right. So we get to, so the states makes the rules, but they say every connection needs to have a backflow prevention. But it's up to the discretion of the district. So, every city, every district, every water purveyor.
Oh, so that's why Summit Water, like people I know in Jeremy Ranch, never have theirs inspected. And that's why, because Summit Water has the discretion.
Correct. Yeah, no, the state, it's kind of gray. They want you to test it.
Our ordinance says every connection is to have their backflow preventer tested.
I think what it's getting at, Mike, and we can talk internally about this and get you a more formal response, is that every connection that we are aware of that has a backflow preventer must have it inspected.
Right. Yeah, it's a little, I think it could use a little work. It's the state left us in a bad spot, right?
It's, and, well, in part because Park City doesn't enforce it the way we do, nor does Summit Water enforce it the level that we do.
Yeah. So, that's correct, Bob. The feedback we've gotten from the state is that we have one of the better programs in the state, which said another way means that we're enforcing it more than most others. So, and that has created a lot of heartburn amongst our customers, amongst our board members, and, you know, part of the reason.
In our neighborhood here, it was confusing why this one connection here, and they're all basically the same, has to provide that. I mean, it has value. It proves it works, but it's...
And I think in that case... I was going to say, Mike, I think in that case it was due to when we... There was an inspection on the system at the home, whether it was a new meter install or some other event where we became aware of an irrigation system, a backflow preventer that was installed.
All right, so we were in Bob's questions.
That was it for me.
Okay. That's good. Tim, how are you doing? You got any?
Yeah, I got a number of them, and some of them came from just the discussions we have. Scott, I think it might be worthwhile to check with county legal with regards to the liability.
Tim, you broke.
You just dropped off there.
Yeah, you broke up with liability. You there, Tim?
Okay. Hey, let's go on to Ian and...
Hold on a second. I think I got
there he is.
Back. I'm just checking that we might want to find out where the principal liability is for faulty backflow preventers. Maybe check with the legal guys whether that falls with the property owners or with Mountain Regional.
So your backflow assembly is owned by the homeowner. They are responsible for the maintenance and repair and the annual testing. We're responsible for enforcing it and keeping some records.
Okay, well, that kind of leads me to the second thing that I had here, because Bob brought up a really good issue with regards to the trench shielding. And we have to make sure that we have a contract that clearly cites that contractor has the responsibility for those types of things, particularly if we're on site and seeing that it's not there. Generally speaking, when you have a licensed engineer on site observing something that's inherently unsafe, it doesn't necessarily take them off of the line of liability. You might want to look into that.
That's a good point, Tim. We will do that.
And I don't know, is Chris on the line?
Yeah, I'm here, Tim.
I liked what you were saying in your report about using technology to make sites safer by not having to access them, confined spaces.
Uh-huh.
To the degree that we can do that wherever we can, that's got to be money in the bank.
Definitely. Brian agrees.
The other thing, the GIS position, what kind of qualifications are you looking at? Is it like an entry-level thing?
We've had some internal discussions about it. Entry-level would be at the bottom of the list. I mean, we'd like somebody that has some administration experience with the software. If they're eager and they're smart, yeah, we would take somebody that's entry-level if it's the right fit.
Yeah. You know, nowadays, GIS is almost like saying you get an MD. What kind of doctor are you?
Yeah. Yep.
And then the final thing was, I was taking a look at the the human resources thing, and there was a resolution regarding Marty, where it had lots of whereases and all that kind of stuff on there. And Scott, what I'm going to ask you to take a look at, if you would, for board review, is there any mechanism in place where we can actually name facilities after folks? You know, calling it like the Doug Evans treatment plant or something like that, and have a plaque up there explaining why it's called the Doug Evans treatment plant. Because we've got a lot of facilities, and it just seems like it was nice having a little drive-by and everything for Marty, but, you know, I'm talking about something that might go further than that. So something that would talk about the eligible facilities, the eligibility of the individuals, the mechanism for involving the board and all that kind of stuff, just for review by the board. It's not a high priority thing. I'm just asking if you would take a look at coming up with some mechanism where we might be able to do something like that.
Absolutely, yes, we will take a look at it. It's not something I believe that's been contemplated by the district in the past, and I think it sounds like a good idea.
Well, it's probably a minefield in some respects.
But well, the county doesn't. You know, Sheldon Richmond's building, right?
Yeah. Let's take a look at it and see if we can avoid the minefield.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks, Tim. Ian, did you have any department update questions?
I'm probably pretty easy at this point because, Karen got the Leo Williams question that I had. We already gave Chris props for his photos multiple times. Thanks, Chris. And, my last thing was the Marty proclamation. I just wanted to thank Lisa for spearheading that and putting that together. I'm sure there's a whole number of people behind that, but, I really appreciate that effort. So that's it for me.
Okay, well, it's 8:30. There's nothing else. Does anybody have any other questions or anything we need to cover, Scott?
All good on my
end. Have you had hair day, Mike, or are you not turned on your heat yet?
I was outside. It took me a while to warm up. All right. Well, let's stand adjourned at 8:31 tonight. That was a really nice effort, everybody. That's a good one with the agenda and the budget and the projects. Really well done.